can you tell us a story about a bald man?
I can't actually believe I'm sat here defending an MX-5.
also, to an MX-5 owner. Yeah.
But undertaking's not illegal.
I think it might be.
No!
Look, driving laws with need, Tom. Hello, and welcome back to the Cars Rule Everything Around Me podcast with myself, Edwin, Will to the left, Ben to the front,
hello,
and to the right, Tom Lenthal.
Hello.
Owner of the very creatively named Tom Lenthal Limited, Jaguar Land Rover specialist. He's the man that saved us countless times.
Oh, many.
Parts, tools, help. So we thought, you know what, he's also a very interesting man. Don't tell him we said that. And we thought we should get him on the podcast. So first things first, how are you doing, Tom?
I'm all right today, yeah. You boys?
Good, very good, thank you. At the beginning of every podcast, we answer whether cars rule or ruin everything around us. Tom, do you want to start?
Last week, because it's the beginning of the week, isn't it? I'm ruling at the moment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. So, but is it allowed to be a two-wheel thing instead of a four-wheel thing? Is that?
That's fine, that's absolutely fine.
It has to be very brief.
Though. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's two wheels, it's going to be half as long.
Oh, I could talk for hours on this. So I did a track day at Donington on Friday.
Okay.
I went to the...
On a motorbike, yeah.
And I've been having a bit of bad luck with my cars recently. My track car's broken. I've done the engine on that. I broke down on the way to Switzerland in my E-Type. You know, I've had a few ruins.
Very Tom Lenthal problems.
Third world problems, aren't they? Yeah, yeah. So I've been building one of my old bikes that I've had for 15 years, and I gave it a complete refresh, powder coated the frame, rebuilt the engine, da, da, da. And it's the first time I used it, and it was perfect, and it was brilliant, and it was great. And I walked away with a big, massive smile on my face. And yeah, so it made my week. It's made my last 5-10 days is perfect.
Nice.
Did I see that on your Instagram? Was it the two-stroke?
Bikes are warming up. I didn't actually have my two-stroke there. I took one of my four-strokes and the one I rebuilt. But
Say what bike it is.
It's a GSXR 750.
Okay.
Those are numbers.
Suzuki GSXR 750.
That old?
That one is 2005.
Okay.
And it's a two-stroke?
No, it's a four-stroke. Okay, so I've got two-stroke bikes, but I didn't... A few of my mates took their two strokes, but I took this because I'd literally just finished it. And it was actually supposed to be a pre-2000s day.
You just broke the rules.
You just paid them off.
Just paid them off.
A little bribe at the gate.
Yeah. They always say, as long as it's in the spirit of, and I'm like, well, I'm pre-2000, so it's fine, isn't it? You know?
The rider.
Yeah, the rider is pre-2000. Okay. Yeah, exactly.
So starting on a rule, William?
I'm going to go with a rule as well, if I'm honest.
You got a new delivery.
Yeah, we've got Renault 5 outside. Renault 5 Electric, which I picked up this morning, which is a press car. Not our first press car.
No, Dacia.
Still in the same group, though.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, it's one of those cars that I've always found interesting. New cars do not interest me at all. Yep. But when that came out, it looked quite interesting. So I just emailed Renault and said, can I have one, please?
And they said, okay, boss, we can give you one, but only for 3 days.
But it's interesting that literally every single person that's seen that car so far has gone, oh, I really like these.
Yeah. Mm.
They're cool. They are cool.
If someone parks a Tesla in the car park, which there has been, and other electric cars have been here, everyone just walks past it. But that, it might be to do with the fact it is bright green.
It's quite green.
But it is quite cool. So I'm going to drive it this week, and we're going to film a video with it tomorrow.
Yeah.
We'll get on to something quite funny about it later on, but and yeah, other than that, yeah, no reason to ruin for me. Oh, sorry, another big rule, which Tom likes.
I got excited.
So behind visual people, you will see a Ford Mustang behind us. For your audio people, there is a Ford Mustang behind us. You might be able to see a GT350 on there. It's not a real GT350.
Old.
But subscriber Neil, 1965. Subscriber Neil has let us borrow this car for a video we're shooting on Wednesday in a couple of days' time.
He's also a creamer.
He is
shout
a creamer.
Shout out Neil.
He's a creamer. He really wanted to have the car behind on the podcast, and obviously we obliged because this is possibly the coolest car we've had.
Usually we'd put the TV on the car, but we thought, you know what, Neil, let's not scratch up the paintwork. So sorry, you can't see your car a bit more, but you know, maybe next time. But
that is a cool car.
That is an incredible car. It sounds... we haven't driven it.
Yeah, no, we haven't driven it.
It got delivered on a trailer. That's another thing. Neil was cool enough to go, yeah, basically I live 4 hours away, but if someone wants to come and collect it on a trailer, you can have it for a few days.
Yeah.
So it's now, none of us have driven it yet, but we're all kind of drooling over it.
But it's like one of his dream cars. He always wanted it. So he bought it, I think earlier this year. And yeah, he reckons it's over 400 horsepower, that car. Manual. Yeah, I'm a bit scared to drive it, but yeah, looking forward to it.
That's going to be good.
Yeah.
Benjamin?
Is it a lefty, isn't it?
It's a proper one.
I'm in Rule currently. I've been over the weekend working out the list of things my cars need to make them happy again. So I'm about to go into ruin stations, but I've bought a part for my X5.
Here you go.
What is it?
I bought a steering angle sensor.
Oh,
yeah. I know.
It's only thrilling news on the Chrome podcast.
Exactly, yeah. So that's going in this week by me. And then
Clio gearbox?
It has one.
Sure. Yeah, it still has one?
It is in desperate need of an alignment, so I haven't driven it for about two weeks.
Okay.
But when that happens, we're back.
We're so back.
And you like the 5 as well. You sat in that.
I have one of those, yeah. I just can't get home in it. It doesn't go very far.
It joins the very long list of cars Ben likes.
What is this?
For context, every single time Benjamin gets in a car, no matter what car it is, he goes, I could have one of these. It's quite nice.
Because I could have one of those.
It could be a seat filled with nails.
Is this generally due to a lack of sitting in lots of cars prior? Or?
Do you know what? I'm going to say, Tom, I've probably sat in a lot of cars. I've sat in quite a lot of interesting cars. I like them. They're cool. But we get so many cool cars, I'm going to sit in it and like it, aren't I? Sometimes.
But we're thinking of doing a video, or we probably won't, but funny, is that we find a video Ben doesn't like.
But it could be upwards of an hour.
Yeah.
Ben just gets in every car and goes,
I like it. It's nice. The Renault's nice inside.
But so overall, it's a rule.
Sure. We'll take that for now, yeah.
And for you,
it's a ruin for me because I was driving home in the M3 the other night, and I pulled up at a junction. I had the windows down, and as I pulled away from the junction, I heard psh, 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 pulled over. Yeah, it was a hole in my tire, quite badly. So managed. Jamie, thankfully, was still at the unit. I was only 10 minutes away. I stole a set of Alex's M3 wheels. He brought them over to me, stuck them on the back of my car. They might be still on there a week later. Oh well. So I've had to buy new tires. And while I was under there, I looked my rear camber arm, and there is a crack in my rear camber arm. Ooh. So I'm not driving that car anymore. I need to drive my White E36 home. So it might be time for an M3 refresh of parts. So there's bits and bobs on order. We'll see. Also, I might be fixing the suspension by buying a boot lid for it.
So that won't have anything to do with the way you drove it in Wales the other day?
No, no. What do you mean? I drove it completely normally.
I was going to say, there's photographic evidence.
Yeah, yeah. It's been slightly abused, I think.
Oops, maybe. So a bit of a mixed bag this week. Have we got some anecdotes and newses?
We are having newses. Sorry, I'm just trying to find the here we are. The only real news we have was something we actually found this last week. So this is old news, but again, this is our podcast and we do old news. Corvette, Chevrolet even, have come out with another Corvette, and then they've taken them to the Nürburgring, three of them, and absolutely blitzed a load of times.
Actually ridiculous.
It's all very, very impressive, and it's like 6 minutes something. I can't remember what it is. And it's this 1200 horsepower hybrid version
which I think is the yellow one,
yeah, with a huge wing and blah blah blah. But the difference between the very, very the ridiculous one and the next most ridiculous one is like a second and a bit, but it is quite a cost difference. So they've kind of gone out there and gone, oh shit, maybe it's not worth all that money to do all that. But either way, ridiculously quick. So it was a 6:49 Nürburgring time,
yeah, that is quick,
insane, and that's an American.
So
what an American drove it round?
I doubt it. I'm gonna doubt that. But
I bet it was a German.
It doesn't actually say the driver. To be fair,
so supposedly the base price of a ZR1 is $178,000. The ZR1X is supposedly going to be around at least $200,000 to $250,000. So that is around about $75,000 markup. That's quite chunky. That's quite a lot.
The driver seems to be an American.
Ooh,
this is an all-American victory at the moment.
Surely not. Crazy.
But yeah, I just thought it was like big news. We've done this. And they went, oh yeah, but the very expensive one is only ever so slightly quicker than the next most. Normally you'd want it to go, right, it's 5 seconds quicker.
But still, I would love to try one of those. That is an absurd car. A 1,200 horsepower car that you can buy from a dealership.
So ridiculous. Are they retailing them in the UK as well?
Well, there are
companies
right-hand
that
drive,
sell them.
But I think the E-Ray might be right-hand drive. I want to say that there are C8 Corvettes that are right-hand drive offered in the UK.
Because there are companies that sell the...
Yes, you can get a Stinger and you can get a Z06. I'm not sure about a ZR1.
Yeah, but right-hand drive or left-hand drive?
Yeah, actual right-hand drive ones.
Oh, wow. Right-hand drive.
Which I actually think takes me away from it.
I bet the ZR1 won't be, surely. And that, was it X? But they claimed when they launched that, that it would do 0-60 in 1.9 seconds. Mm. It does have a little asterisk next to it, which we reckon is probably prep track,
yeah.
semi-slicks,
yeah,
perfect
yeah, yeah.
conditions, racing jockey as a driver, a nice wind.
Well, 0-60 in under two.
Yeah. yeah. Mm. Suppose, well, I mean, it's, so the base car is what, 800 horsepower? Or
the ZR1 is still 1,000.
Oh, it's 1,000, sorry. Yeah. And then there's another 200 or 300 horsepower of electric motors on the front wheels
yeah.
in the Ultra one. So that's, I'd buy it. I reckon
I'd buy a low two.
Around about two, yeah.
yeah. But a 1.9 is that there's enough room for error there that
yeah, yeah.
The wind could be ever so slightly off and you're gonna be in the twos.
Also, I remember like growing up watching Top Gear, a car that could go into three was like, what?
Yeah.
What the hell? And then just recently it feels like we've just got into twos, and yet now they're like, yeah, one. It's gonna be tomorrow. They're like, yeah, it's instant. Nah, nothing. No, just, it's, you're just straight, you're at 60.
Yeah, as soon as you get in it, it's doing
just,
60.
It's gone.
But that was the only news that I've spotted that was of
sure.
any use. So we'll go into anecdotes. And first one we'll start off with is this terrible car ad. I'm going to start off with an apology on this. A man on Instagram sent this somewhere.
Let me pull it up.
To someone, and I've forgotten your name. So if it's you, all credit goes to you. But you sent us this incredible eBay ad, which is one of the worst adverts I've ever seen.
Here we go, pulling it up now.
That is a photo of a phone.
On a magazine.
On a magazine.
On a table.
On a table.
Of an Audi A.T.
TDI estate.
So that is the rear shot. The first photo is the rear shot. You click through and then you get a video, which when you click on it, plays a man filming another phone of a video walking around the car, which is ridiculous.
Which means he's got two devices to be doing this.
He's holding two devices. And then we go through. Yeah, we've got another one. The reflection on the glass is quite nice here. Just taking away from you being able to tell anything about the car. And then the final one is just fully on a newspaper, also with the old person's flip out phone. Tom, you got one of those?
Well, the thing is, I'm sitting here thinking, even someone as IT non-savvy as me think that that's ludicrous what you've done. Now, I am guilty of recording footage off of my laptop by recording the screen. Because
you sent me that once.
Did I really? Yeah, yeah. I do that because I'm a bit, you know, like backwards with that sort of stuff. But I mean, does he not have WhatsApp?
No, probably not.
Did you know what I mean?
I don't think he's aware of an eBay app.
How did he work out to even create the advert on eBay?
Exactly.
Maybe he's
gone to like a family member and said, can you put this on eBay? And they're equally as, they're just ever so slightly more advanced than I am.
I'm struggling with the logic of the whole thing.
Because you have access. Clearly you have access to two mobile devices. Yeah, Surely your brain could make one connection. Was it the Mustang that we found on eBay the other day? That was incorrectly listed as the Ford Mr. Tang.
It was listed as Mr. Ian Ford.
Mr. Ian Ford. But the eBay ad had expired three times. So he had relisted it, seeing that the title was Mr. Ian Ford every single time and gone, that looks right to me.
Completely fine. For Mr. Ian Ford.
Surely you take one moment to look at your listing and go, this sounds like a man from accounting. Not my car that I'm trying to sell.
Mr. Ian Ford. He's like, why is my car not selling? Possibly because it's listed as Mr. Ian Ford. Maybe he thinks he's like in some sort of, you know, people say like not Mustang, not this.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'll sell it like that. It'll be different.
Also, quick aside, Tom,
I know, it's good, isn't it?
You've chosen Driver 2 to be on the screen behind.
Brilliant. I haven't seen it for years now, you know. I'm just going to sit here watching it.
So this is, someone has remastered this to play nicely on PC. So it looks really nice and clear. But is this in your head how you remember it looking?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah.
Because we do it every week. We look at it and we go, that looks amazing. And then I go home and play it on PS2 and go, oh, no, this looks dreadful. But this looks great. But yeah. Will you play this? You played Driver 2?
I remember this one. I remember the three more.
Yeah.
Having the number three in Driver. Yeah.
But yeah, two is, I played at a friend's house and it was... there's something about these games that is just it's irreplaceable. So good.
Games were better. They're not better now, as in like they're more advanced and you can do more.
Yeah,
but that doesn't make a game better.
Agreed.
I don't want to get into gaming and stuff and that like on that now. But I think it's like supercars.
Mm. If you gave me a brand new game of I don't know Formula One or whatever it is, I would go back to this and have more fun playing this for sure.
You might spend less time on this, but you can, as in like you can't, there's less to do.
We used to spend hours on it. Because we were tight. Yeah. So in my mate's shed. So my mate has a shed where we used to go around and play cards and drink and, you know, all that sort of stuff and play. And
play Driver 2.
Play Driver 2. So we would pass, you know, there'd be like four or five of us in there. We'd have a go each. So we'd be there all afternoon, all day, you know, it'd be brilliant, you know.
Yeah. And it's also a bit more sociable than all being in your own houses.
Yeah, well, we didn't have, you know, it wasn't online then.
Yeah.
You know, we couldn't, you know, sit at home and be unsociable and talk to people over the internet.
And abuse people over the internet.
And generally abuse people because that didn't exist. So you had to get in your car and drive somewhere and go and visit people. It was very, very strange by today's standards.
And abuse them to their face instead.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Tom's quite good at that.
Yeah, I've had years of practice. What can I say?
Right, next up. Something we spoke about in a recent podcast, Ben's daily choices.
Yeah, I thought that wouldn't be very interesting, but everyone was commenting and messaging me. And
also, that was in the last 2 minutes of the podcast. Yeah. Shout out the creamers. You guys listened the whole way through.
Or just going crazy.
Yeah. So Benjamin. Yeah.
Hi.
You said you're getting fed up of using the X5 every day. You'd quite like a something reliable, cheap that you could just run around. But at the same time, you did have a few requirements. You wanted it to be at least a good MPG. And kind of comfy.
Yeah, what he actually said is he doesn't care.
But
and then we started pitching things. And he goes, well, I'd like heated seats.
That would be nice.
Well, I'd like an automatic gearbox. But have you seen any of those?
Because there was a lot of good suggestions.
I don't want to admit what I looked at. I was looking at Volvo V50s.
Fair.
Because I was getting bullied by Will for that.
Yeah, of course. But, and myself, Will.
Quite nice. But I don't know. I like the X5.
Want in a Volvo?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Tom, you probably want one that's more demographic, isn't it?
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, see, Tom agrees with me. No, it's I like the X5 a lot, but it's the fact that when it doesn't really go wrong, when it does go wrong, then it costs a lot to fix.
Okay. What, a Volvo?
No, the X5.
Oh, sorry, I phased
that. Like, so our discussion was that whether Ben buys something boring or whether he leases something. He looks at getting finance on something a little bit newer that he never has to worry about, and he just munches miles onto it. And a lot of people responded and said, I like cars like you guys do, buying project cars, buying old pieces of shit, but I have leased or financed the car and it's changed my life for the better. So we were saying Ben is the perfect guinea pig because we're not doing that.
So I've looked at leasing a car.
Okay.
So I like to have one sort of, you know, sort of normal car for me to use, you know.
That works.
That works. Yeah. Other than driving the van.
Yeah.
So I looked at leasing it, but then I find what I do is I buy a car, I drive it around for 6 months, and then I sell it, and then I change it for something else. And if I lease it, I'm kind of committed to, you've got to be committed to like 2 or 3 years or something like that.
Yeah.
And I'd get bored, I know I would.
I'm assuming there are ways out of stuff like that. But again, that's what puts me off is I have never owned a car for that long.
Normally you have to put, I don't know, a few grand down. It's a down payment, isn't it? And then there's a certain amount you pay per month for 3 years. And then at the end of it, you hand it back.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's quite an expensive way. People think it's a cheap, or it comes across as a cheap way of owning a car, but I think it's quite expensive.
Mm. Especially when if you're aware as we are in our industry, that you can get good cars for cheap.
Yeah.
You can get a £2,000 car that will run for the next 3 years with minimal servicing.
Some of the cars that I've bought, so cheap, but I've literally pumped 30, 40, 50, 60,000 miles on them.
But to a lot of people, it's a scary, you know.
Cost of ownership was literally zero, you know, in reality, you know, compared to
sawdust in the gearbox.
Just keep it going. Yeah, definitely. But Ben, how much would you spend a month, Ben?
That's the thing. I don't want to spend the money a month.
My
issue with it is that you do 3 years of paying for a car and then you have nothing to show for it.
Yeah, that's it.
You're just renting it.
It's spent
so,
money.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. I would not. I mean, from what I've seen, mostly steals on anything half decent is going to be like £300-£400 a month at least. So
Volvo, a used Volvo is where you're leaning.
Yeah, probably.
Your other problem is mileage on that thing. That's what a lot of people say. So obviously, you come here from. I mean, how many miles have you done in the X5 since you bought it from me?
Since November last year, and I've done 25,000?
Finance company's going to bend you over.
They normally have a mileage limit of 10 or 12,000 a year. So yeah, if you're paying like £400 a month, you know, that's sort of the thick end over 3 years of 15K.
Yeah.
Plus what you got to put down.
For nothing.
Yeah. And there's always going to be like a 5-10 grand put down, isn't there? So I don't know what one of those cars costs new. Are they like 40 grand? Are they something like that for it?
Well, it depends what you'd be looking for if you did it.
Yeah, yeah. Usually it's, what, 30, 40 grand. Well, most cars are 30 grand.
Yeah, so they're now expensive.
So I probably won't do that. I'll probably buy some more, something else terrible, and then just use that for 6 months and get something else terrible. Fair. Like we all do.
Join the club.
What you have right now is an X5, which is slightly more complex than your average. It's a cheap car, you know, compared to what it was new, but it's still relatively complex.
Yeah.
You know, it's still a big four-wheel drive SUV, bushes, bigger brakes, blah, blah, blah. So if you had something that was a bit more simple in a similar price bracket, I don't think you'd have the same.
How many miles has the X5 got on it?
175,000.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's got a lot, yeah. It's now the point though, it's coming around for it's like, you know, you get a buy a car at 100K, it's had stuff done to it. It's now coming back around again for that second.
Yeah, yeah.
Give me more bushes, give me more bits and bobs. But I was looking at like a 3 Series. If you get a manual M57 3 Series.
A manual?
Yeah, because what's going to go wrong with that?
True, but also you again auto, Ben.
Yes.
The amount of miles you do, just get an auto and just live life.
Autos, though, they're just scamming.
First traffic jam you get. A manual, yeah, it's cheaper, and obviously the only real cost with a reliable manual is a clutch, really.
Yeah.
Are you scared because of the brown barge?
Very, 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 very scared.
Scared because of the what?
So Benjamin bought to be fair, under our duress, we suggested this 530D that came up on Carwow. It was on Carwow.
Yeah.
And it was like a grand, it was 1500 quid. It was pretty cheap for them. Mm. And Ben bought it and literally everyone was like, this thing is amazing. Apart from Will hated it because it was a base model. But everyone was like, this is a solid car, it's really good. And then Ben happened to be on the way back home one day.
Well, sorry, before you say that, we went to TRS Performance, right? And they have they're all like obviously into cars and stuff. And they all came out and were looking around the car and telling me how good it was. And I was like, this is great. Because Will's abusing me about not having air conditioning, whatever. And then I was driving home on the M5.
You're now feeling good about yourself.
I love it. And we're out, what a bargain, on the M5. And then I accelerate and the car goes, and it just redlines and like gets stuck in gear. And then just tells me transmission error. And I had to pull over on the hot shoulder. And then it kept doing that where it just slipped out of gear. So
you done the gearbox?
Well, I didn't do anything to it. It just went. But I don't know if
So Ben sent it off to the big next owner in the sky without telling them.
No, that's not true. I guess Taylor.
Deceptive Ben.
Gave it to the same
I saw it's Taylor, yeah. Taylor brought it off me.
So that car's gone. So is that why, that's why you're scared of gearbox?
Yeah, because also the gearbox in that is the exact same as what's in the X5.
But let me be your devil or your angle on your shoulder. Your manual Clio. What does that need? What part does that need?
A gearbox.
So it's just as like to have it in a manual.
Also, it sounds
like you've got form, Ben.
Yeah. I hate cars. Yeah, they all break.
Ben's a gearbox smasher.
Okay, so we will watch your career with great interest on whether or not
I genuinely don't think it's that interesting, me buying your deli, because it's not anything interesting. It's just
car. We might have to make a video on it just because it's quite funny.
On the V50.
Even though the final car was boring.
I like a V50. An R-Design V50. Cool to me.
Get a little D5
What's
in there.
A V50?
I'll show you. I'll pull it up now.
Is he a small estate?
He's the smallest estate.
If you're not going to lease a car, what budget would you have to buy one? If you were gonna, I'm going to buy a car, it's going to last me 6 months to a year, going to put 25,000 miles on the clock.
I'll probably, because I need to rely on it quite a lot, I'll probably go call it like 3.5 to 4. Maybe if a really nice one, maybe like 5.
There you go.
Maybe like 6.
Nah.
I like those.
I could push to 10 though.
I think they're still smart as well.
That's all right. Mm-hmm. Some camera gear in the back of that.
Am I right in saying that's for Ford?
No, it's a Volvo.
No, but I'm fairly sure they're Ford underneath.
Yeah, they're focused.
Yeah.
I've got a really nice L322 coming.
Oh, that sounds reliable. Okay, we can talk.
In Auto Alex Towers, that's your base.
Do you know what, Tom? I'll buy it off you. I want free maintenance for life.
Yeah, that's what Alex says to me as well. Yeah, nobody flips a coin on it and then I lose.
Ben, I'll lend you that double-sided coin.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you daily, Tom? You in that Range Rover's what you use all the time?
No. The Range Rover that I'm in today is actually, that used to be my daily driver and I sold it to a customer.
I actually thought you were going to say it's a customer.
No, it's a customer. But he's a really good, he's actually a mate of mine, and I've literally just been fixing it for him. And so I want to drive it and test it, make sure it was okay. So my, in the summer, I tend to just drive the classic cars, what I've got kicking around. So the Lister Coupe, the V12 Coupe, or the E-Type if that was working, or just whatever's kicking around. But yeah, I don't really. And then in the winter, or rest of the time, I just drive the van.
Well, that actually brings us on to one of our questions. We've got more anecdotes and things. But what do you own currently? What cars? Because a lot of people probably won't know that you have a very cool collection, essentially, of cars.
I've got a few bits and pieces, yeah.
One of which is our favourite that we keep bugging you about. that's not Jaguar Land Rover. Mm-hmm. But what is it that you've got at the moment that's your stable?
What's in the stable at the moment? So if I, all right, starting with the oldest, 1957 Mark I Jaguar, which is a saloon and it's also a race car. So it's a, nice. Yeah, which I've been building for a while. It's nearly finished. 1957 XK150.
Oh, cool.
Convertible, dropper. So that's quite a cool car. Quite like that. Meg really likes that one. Then what do we go to?
Very small photo.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
apologies.
Yeah, so it's in that colour as well, actually.
I knew, yeah.
You
yeah.
did know, you've seen it.
That's your car, Tom.
Yeah. I've got a 1969 Morris Minor convertible.
Oh, I won't put
I wouldn't. I wouldn't have, that doesn't feel very
you
Tom
wouldn't. No. That's a brilliant car.
I can't even picture you driving it.
I actually bought it for my wife as a present. And
she was very unhappy.
So I'm not very good at buying my wife presents, like, you know, like jewelry and rings and stuff like that. So anyway, I bought her this Morris Minor and I wrapped it up I went to the jewelers and got a ring box.
Oh, cool.
And put the keys in it. And she thought I'd bought her a ring.
It was a Morris Minor.
Morris Minor keys.
God damn it, Tom.
But actually that is the classic car that I've driven the most out of all of the cars I've got.
Really?
Yeah, because we used to use it in the summers all the time with the kids. I'd drive it to Cornwall, Devon and Lake District and I've been everywhere in that car.
That's cool.
So that was actually a really, really well used car.
What is the fastest you've got that up to?
Ah, that's a good question. So on the A303 going down to Cornwall, the speedo's going all over the place, going down the hill. And but of course, you know, the sat nav in 85.
Ping. 85 in a Morris Minor.
Yeah, with 10. I think they're one. Are they 135 tyres or something like that? And I've got my, you know, because I'm very, very safety conscious. We've got seatbelts, and my 10-year-old daughter sat in there with me. Can't we just nailing it down the hills? Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah, so Meg would always drive her car, which is my wife always drives a Range Rover, has done for years. So she would take the Range Rover with my son in it normally and all the luggage, and then me and Erin would go in the Morris Minor, but
in the slipstream of the
of the Range Rover. But I remember being in Padstow. We were staying in Padstow area and we've gone down into Padstow in Meg's Range Rover because it was raining, and it's like, I don't know if you've ever been into Padstow, but it's very pedestrian-y and there's lots of people walking around. Nowhere to park. Everyone hates you. You're in a Range Rover. Yeah. You know, da, 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 da. So then the next day, the sun's shining, and I come down in the Morris Minor, and it's like, you know, everyone just smiles at it, and it's a universally, it's the car that makes people just universally happy.
Yeah,
people are always happy to see a Morris Minor convertible, and I've pulled into the car park, and it's an attended car park, right? And as I've literally pulled in there, the mate, he's moved a cone out the way. He's, oh, you can park that there, mate. You know, you know, and it's just, and I love it. I just love that car. So, right. So we've got the Morris Minor convertible. Trying to think what else we've got. XJS. Because I've got to have an XJS. So I've got the XJS race car. I've actually got a couple of XJSs. The stuff that you like is, I'm sure you're on about the Sierra Cosworth.
Yeah.
So I've got a 1986 Whaletail Sierra Cosworth, which I've had for a very long time. But again, that was a boyhood dream. You know, it was like, you know, it was from a car from my youth. One of my friend's dad had one, and it's in white as well. Yeah. So yeah.
Just one of the best cars ever.
Yeah.
Simply one of the best cars.
That is just, that is a stunning car. That is, I love it.
We're still waiting to see that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's, well, I've been doing a load of work on it. We gave it a full repaint and I just haven't got round to putting it all back together. So, I was going to try and get it out this year, but I don't think it is. I think it's going to be next year.
Just going to have to wait.
Yeah, you are going to have to be patient, I'm afraid.
I've got my balaclava in my hand. I'm ready. I am ready to ram raid a shop.
What else we got? Peugeot 205 GTI.
That's cool. Hey, fellow owners.
Yeah.
We're fellow owners.
Yeah, no, I've got the Peugeot. That's quite a cool thing. Obviously, the Project 8.
Oh, that is very cool. So what is the story of you getting that? Because that was a customer that offered it to you?
So that journey started with Harry Metcalf.
Right.
So I always knew they were quite a cool car. And we've actually had quite a few at work, but I don't actually test drive for cars at work. The boys do. And when I was doing Harry's XJ for him, he came down to do some filming and he bought the Project 8. And he said, oh, have you ever driven it? And I was like, well, no, is a straightforward answer. I've never driven one. And while he was setting his equipment up and that, he just threw me the keys and said, go and take it for a drive. And I was like, oh God, that's, you know, I need one of these.
Yeah.
You know, this is just, you know, I've driven loads of 5 liter XKRs, this, you know, but that is in a whole different territory of performance, you know, just the way it handles and the way it brakes and just the driving. Well, you came out.
Yeah, I was impressed.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, it's
very impressed.
It's a quick bit of kit. So we looked after them for a few customers, and I just said to my customers, if you ever come to sell, please let me know. I'd be interested. Mm. So they do two different types. They do what you call the track pack,
yep,
which has got all full roll cage in it, and two carbon seats in the back, no rear seats. And then they do a touring one, which doesn't have the rear wing. And then they do the one that I've got, and I don't even really know what sort of name they put to that particular model as such, but it's got four seats. And I thought, if you're going to buy a four-door car, you've got to have four seats.
Yeah, I always think the same thing.
For me personally.
It's,
you know,
the, because they do the Giulia GTAM, which is, it still has the rear doors that you can open, but there's just a cage in there.
Yeah.
Like, what's the point then?
Yeah, yeah.
Just having those rear doors.
I kind of, you know, and it's like, why do they, I know they say they do it for taxation reasons, but like, if you look at like an XKR, you know, why did you put those rear seats in there? What? You know, apparently it's to do with taxation.
Right.
You know, 2+2. You know, what is the point? No one in their right mind is going to get in. I mean, even when we were looking at that Renault 5 earlier, we're talking about it.
We're struggling. Yeah,
with the seats fall back, I was going to break my ankle trying to get into the back. But it's, so anyway, it's got, so I wanted the four-seater one, which they're only allegedly, so I'm told, and I don't know the full numbers, but in the UK, there's like 15 of them.
Right.
With four seats.
Is that the car you would keep if you had to get rid of them all? Or would it be the Morris Minor? Oh, is that a tricky one?
So no, there is a car that I own that I can't sell.
Is this the one that you're not allowed to talk about yet?
No.
Okay.
I'm not allowed to talk about that one, but okay. I would sell that.
Oh wow, okay.
Yeah.
So what is the car then you wouldn't sell?
Is the Lister.
Is it the Lister? Is that, yeah, that
the,
is your
the 1977 XJ Coupe Lister, yeah. No, because I've, when I was a 16-year-old and I turned up at the workshop, it was there.
It was that exact car?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
So when I was 16 and I turned up at the restoration company, there was, out the front, there was a green coupe Lister, which I now own, yeah? And next to it was a Jaguar Mark II race car. And they both belonged to a guy called Derek Pierce. And then when my old boss retired, Piercy then came to see me and said, right, can you look after the cars, blah, 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 blah. And then I ended up subsequently racing the Mark II car, race car cool. with him. So I've raced that extensively now. Derek still owns that. And then I bought the Lister.
That is cool. That's a very worthwhile car to keep.
Yeah, then. Yeah. So I've known that car and worked on that car since I was 16 years old. So
That's cool.
And it is still today probably one of my favorite classic cars to drive.
Yeah.
Just
I mean, when we saw you drive it, we saw some lovely black marks end up behind it, which were quite cool.
We went for a curry.
That was quite good. That was
I felt like I was 17 again.
Yeah.
I was in a Tesco car park meet.
I felt like I was in an episode of Minder. It was a little bit Arthur Daly. It was really quite nice. I felt just a moustache go ping across the top of my lip.
Everything went into sort of like slightly sepia.
Yeah. There's a Capri somewhere being ragged around.
So, and then there's obviously the E-Type, which is...
The E-Type, which you don't want to talk about right now.
Which is paining me at the moment, yeah, which is a real pain. Yeah, anyway, I'll fix that.
But yeah, so long story short, the engine did not engine anymore when you're on the way to Switzerland.
Yeah, it's really... I'm going to take it a bit. So I've got a horrible feeling that we had a few problems with the fuel pump, and I don't think it's an engine failure. I think it's... Well, it is an engine failure, but I think it went lean.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I think it snipped up on a piston. That's what I think's happened. Because I pulled the spark plugs out and they were like white.
Ugh.
So I know it's gone lean.
Yeah.
I think it's just...
Fuel pump's not happy.
Something with a fuel line, a fuel pump. There's an issue going down the motorway at 80 miles an hour and it just, you know, in France and prolonged. And I think it's just gone. Gone lean.
Well, I mean, but if there's anyone that's going to get the car back up and going, it's you. So
no, we will. My goal is to get it to... Food and fuel.
The food and fuel up the hill.
Yeah, and take
it. You going up the hill?
Ooh, yeah, yeah, cool. Of course. So. Yeah, yeah.
That's going to be good.
That is going to be.
That cool. will be around about a month.
From
when this comes out.
From when this comes out, it'll be about a month away.
So, 21st
of September, isn't it?
Yeah. There is another food and fuel. We host the last one. This next one is at Shelsley Walsh, up a little bit towards Gloucester, somewhere.
I actually don't know.
Somewhere like that.
I couldn't
that.
Point it out on a map.
Somewhere in the country. But there are tickets to go, and I think there might still be some tickets if you want to take your cars up. So if you're a creamer who wants to take their car up, please go ahead and grab some tickets.
It has to be somewhat cool.
Also, we have been authorized by Shelsley Walsh to do a rolling burnout until halfway up the track. So I'm bringing the E55. So we're going to see if we can do a big old burnout.
Both cars behind us should be, so the Jag, which is on the left.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know if you can see it, but that's just had an exhaust, which, well, we're going to call it an exhaust. It's a set of pipes.
It's a straight pipe.
That come out of the back. So it sounds
where
the same.
Did you get them from?
That was from Horsham Developments, where we need to get dynoed. Okay, cool. And they just
knocked them up for you.
Yeah, they called us and said, do you want back boxes? I just said, no, you're all right. And it just sounds ridiculous. But that will go. And also, I've spoken to Neil, who owns the Mustang, and he'd also very much like to take this up there.
Yeah. Also, yeah.
That would be cool.
Oliver, who lent us the TVR Tuscan, he's going up the hill.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so nice. That's cool. We got some cool stuff coming.
There's some really cool stuff. We're still like in the process of finding people. And
you said
else.
There might be a 918?
Might be a 918
and
Spider.
There very or, might be a P1.
Or a 918. I just thought that's the same. 918 or 918. A 918 or a very, very loud Aventador.
Yeah, and perhaps a P1.
Perhaps a P1.
Matt Black P1.
Perhaps a P1. There who knows? There are invites out there.
Yeah. So what else we got on anecdotes and what such?
Anecdotes and what such. Any more interesting cars, Tom, though?
Oh, yeah.
Is there anything we don't know about that you think we might like?
Well, the L322 that I've got to take to Croatia, wherever it is we're going.
This is
going
the 3-litre diesel one. Like
3-litre diesel one, yeah. So I've got one of those.
Do you like that?
No.
Good. Because we had one of those, if you remember, very early on TDC.
An L322 is fine. And everyone goes on about, oh, that's a great engine. It is a great engine, but just not in that car.
Yeah,
it's so slow.
It's so slow.
Also, it's not man enough. It's the same engine that's in Ben's X5, but it's a difference of about 40 or 50 horsepower.
Yeah.
And that's noticeable in a 2.5
they're car. I've driven X5s with those engines in and they're fine.
They're fine.
It's relatively nippy. I drove the one that we had briefly and that one was, it felt like genuinely slow.
It reminded me of my 316 auto.
Yeah.
My BMW, where it is literally, nothing's happening. Why is nothing happening?
I cannot imagine that towing anything. It can't even tow itself.
It's painful, isn't it?
Yeah.
But could you map it though?
And it's got a gearbox.
No, because they have different turbos. You know this?
Yeah.
The turbos are there for something.
And also, I think the engine and stuff can be mapped and you can upgrade the engine, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But the gearbox is GM and is made of cheese.
Yeah.
So just die.
We don't do pre-2005 Range Rovers.
Really? Because you can't be bothered.
Yeah, basically. That's because when the diagnostics joined up.
Oh, interesting.
So before that, Range Rover wasn't owned by Ford, was it? Was it Ford? Yeah.
Ford, yeah.
Yeah. Range Rover, Ford bought Range Rover, which I think, can't remember who owned Range Rover before. Can't remember off the top of my head. But anyway, they had a different platform for diagnostics.
Yeah.
With P38s and all that sort of stuff. So which we don't have. And then when it went JLR, when it really actually merged and the technology merged, we could only have one piece of diagnostic equipment that fixes both cars.
Interesting.
And that's 2005 onwards. So that is why I don't do pre-2005 Range Rovers, because I don't want to have to, I don't mess around with that diagnostics.
Fair. Oh, so if you're a pre-2005 JLR owner and you want Tom Lennox to work on your car, boo-hoo.
If it was a December 2004 car, tough. Yeah.
So that Range Rover I've got is 2003.
So you can't work on it yourself?
No.
Sometimes you just go, no. Mate, I can't. I've spoken to Tom in there.
I can fix them. It's
a ball ache.
Well, it's just more trouble than it's worth. We've got enough going on anyway. So there's the Range Rover. My missus has obviously got a Range Rover. That's a little bit newer, that one, funny enough. That's the 4.4 V8 one, which is...
Diesel one.
Diesel, yeah. It's a great car, that is. Trying to think, is there any other
cars? You wouldn't know about that because you've switched to electric cars now. So
I've got electric. Yeah, just an EV man now. Sandal wearing flip flop man.
XK8 convertible, which I just bought.
But you own an MX5.
Ah, I forgot about the MX5. Yeah, I do, yeah.
That was one of the most, that and finding out that you're a cyclist are two of my shocks of this year.
Yeah, genuinely.
So I was MX5, hairdresser's car, bloody hell, what would you want to own one of them for? You know, it's just, you know, load of rubbish, you know, blah, 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 blah. I wouldn't even consider ever looking at one, let alone buying one, until I got offered one dirt cheap. And that was 6 or 7 years ago. I paid £400 for my MX5.
How long is that car been sat there for 6 or 7 years?
What the MX5?
Yeah.
We use it.
Okay.
Every day.
Okay. But it's been outside for 7 years?
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. And there's still an MOT on it?
Yeah.
Okay. just checking, you know, the structural rigidity of it.
I've had to weld it up.
Oh, okay, of course. That's what I was checking.
I've done the seals at the back, and then there's a bit on the front that goes. We've done all of that.
Okay, cool. That makes sense.
But in actual fact, that wasn't bad when we first bought it. The only thing that was wrong with it was it had a couple of dents in it, and someone had slashed the roof and slashed the tyres. So I thought to myself, £400 to buy it, stick a set of tyres on it, a little bit of paint. We'll flip it for like £1,250 or whatever it was, you know, at the time. And then I started driving it and I was like, I can't sell it.
Ooh, I could see myself in this.
It's funny you should say that. But it's the 1800 one, and that engine's so revvy and great. It's brilliant. I was blown away. I was like, I cannot believe how good this thing is.
Now you let me know if you want me to come around and whack a turbo on that, because I've done that a few times. So they go much better.
Yeah, I know. But see, now, funny enough, my son wanted to do that. He said, you know, he's not into cars, James, right? But him and his mate go, oh yeah, you can buy a turbo kit for that, and da 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 da, and James is like, oh, can I have the MX-5 then, and we'll turbo it and all this sort of stuff. And I'm like, no, you want me to buy a turbo kit, fit it, and then you want to drive it. You know, I said, but then I go on the theory that the chassis is so short and all the rest of it, you're just going to put too much power through it and you're going to ruin it.
Nah, I'm the opposite side of it for it, because I believe that standard MX-5s are God's worst gifts to this earth. I hate them, and they can only be made better by doing that sort of stuff.
Why is that?
What?
Can I ask that? I actually never asked this. Why do you actually not like them?
Because if you drive anything comparable to them, especially for the money, now when they're worth as much as they are, there are so many better options out there. MX-5s are floppy and slow and whack and shit.
But even back when they were £1,000?
Yes.
Yeah. Really?
For £1,000, you could go out and buy an E36 318 IS. You could go out and buy an MR2 SW20.
But hold on a minute. Whoa.
No, but Ben's asking me why.
I'm interested because
Ben's asking me why I don't like them, and it's for that reason that I
don't
like
them. Because Evan's very strong about it, but I've never actually asked him why he doesn't like them that much.
But the biggest reason I hate them is because of the people that own them. Because the people that own them go, oh, they're the best thing in the world. All I've done is suspension and a turbo and wheels and coils. Yeah, you're talking about a modified car now.
But my car is completely standard. I've done nothing.
Yeah, no, it's shit.
A standard one.
It's not shit.
Kind of understand. I've only ever driven... Well, I understand the turbo one. It's faster.
I can't believe I'm sat here defending an MX-5.
also, to an MX-5 owner.
Yeah. I remember driving a Mark III MX-5, completely standard, and being quite surprised. And it's not amazing. It's not... The performance isn't amazing, and it's not handling like it's on rails, but there is something...
I can't
Something
speak.
Nice to drive about it. And but the only other thing I've driven is a Mark I.
We drove my 2.5. You remember? You drove that?
And I did quite like that.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Because I can't speak on a Mark III. I don't know. I've never actually driven or owned one of those. But Mark 1s and 2s, I just think are whack.
I remember thinking it would be nicer if it had ever so slightly more power.
Mm.
Like hot hatch power. They're like, what, 150 or whatever?
138 is the standard, or 146.
The other thing I like about the MX-5 is let's just say I've driven it home and I've got the roof down, which most of the time I drive it is when the roof is down, because otherwise it's just, what's the point?
Yeah.
It's the only convertible car that I've ever owned that when I'm sat in my living room watching TV or at my dinner or whatever, and I notice it starts raining outside, I don't care.
Yeah, fair. No, that. But that is.
I just think, well, you know. It's...
That's why I kept mine, because it was the first car I learned to work on. So that thing is battered. It's ruined by me. But that's why I love it, because I don't have to care. How many times have I slid that into a ditch?
Many.
Many times, but that's the best part of it. If I do that on my M3, I'm upset.
It's the cult following around. Again, I don't mind the actual car of the MX-5. I can understand it in standard form and in modified form. But the problem is, there's the standard form people that are like, you cannot get a better car than this.
They
will tell you that it is not worth owning anything other than an MX-5, which is wrong. Well, and then you get the modified
one. I would say they're clearly blinkered at this point, aren't they?
But that's what I mean. There is it's the owner's club thing where it's like, this is the car I have chosen. I mean, we do have a Jaguar specialist on the end.
but see, this is the thing I like is with car culture, everyone would expect me to like, oh no, it's Jaguars, it's got to be this.
Yeah.
You know, but why wouldn't I like a, you know, I don't know, a Porsche or an MX-5. Or,
there's no point
typecasting
yourself into a single manufacturer.
No,
just so many other cool cars out there.
Just variety is the spice.
Definitely. Yeah, no, I think you can, you know, you are allowed. You are allowed to like other things.
Mm. Agreed. Yeah, I just hate
MX-5. See, I like it. It's the sign on the door, currently.
I actually like MX-5.
But that's because you have a personal connection to them. Your dad had one.
Yeah.
That's completely
the first
fair. I
think somewhat that's... interesting car I've experienced, but it's I quite like them. They're quite cool.
Hey, fair enough.
Yeah,
I'm speaking my truth.
That doesn't mean they're good though.
No,
but I do quite like them.
But a good is a. It's not like they again. They're not the fastest or. But the only thing I gleaned from the MX-5 that I drove was that I drove it on a track and I could drive it at absolute max 10. Yeah. And I was never out of control, and it was a good way to learn that sort of thing. But again, it's you don't get out of it, you're not breaking any records in it. It's just good fun.
Yeah, that's the one thing.
It's hot hatch in nature, but in you know sort of rear wheel drive sports car. For it's an old British sports car.
Yeah, type. That's the one thing I would agree that the turbo loses out then on.
Yeah,
is you cannot then because it's like the Honda Beat. You can beat the ever loving shit out of that, and you're never breaking the law, and you're fine. Whereas a turbo MX-5, you can get into trouble.
So your turbo MX-5 now, has it got like super lag on it?
Yeah, no, it's like the TVR. It's built for that because I like that. If you buy a TDO4 and you go a little bit smaller, you can make it.
See, the trouble is with what, because we, as I've told you this the other day, we did this with a VXR. Yeah. If you go too crazy with a turbo and something like that, and you do go on track or even on the road, if you... Even on a damp road, you go around a corner and you start putting your foot down and you're like, oh, it's going to come on. I need to get out of this corner or at least pass the apex before that turbo kicks in. Otherwise, I'm in the ditch.
Yeah. I love that. That's my favorite thing.
Really?
But that is, again, a thing I will give the MX-5. That is the beauty of one. You can build it to whatever you want. If you want to stick an LSV8 in it, they make kits for it. If you want to do an ITB, if you want to make it off-road, people make something for everything for it. I think is that there is worth in building an MX-5. I just don't like the model very much.
They're so rarely modified tastefully.
Mm.
That's my gripe with it.
Well, look at Alex's.
but I think that's usually because they tend to be people's first foray into modifying a car.
Yeah.
It's the only thing they can insure. It's the only rear wheel drive thing someone can insure, that sort of stuff. So I get
yours was one of the first. I don't think you ever did anything that
The rotors I had on it were pretty, they were not great.
But I reckon you could get away with it with the way it was sat and that kind of thing. But with the compromotives and stuff.
What you're really saying is you can forgive them for getting it wrong.
Absolutely. We've said it before. I think anyone that is into cars, your first few years, you're going to build something shit. You're going to build something that you look back on and go, that was not great.
But if you're 40 and building that.
Yeah, then it's tough. Then that's tough. Which actually brings me on to a little anecdote thing I had, which was I want to bring this in every few weeks, is an automotive would you rather. So Tom, for you, I give you the two options.
Would you?
You can either have an old person at a car show talking to you about their replica car endlessly, and they're telling you about how it's the real deal, even though you know it's very clearly a replica. It's one of those 250 GTOs built on a Z3. It's tough.
Yeah.
Or you can have a person in front of you on the motorway who slows down to around 62, 63 miles an hour through every gantry, through each, and you can't get past them. They are stuck in the fast lane no matter what.
All the other lanes are blocked.
Which one would you prefer?
I'd get stuck behind the car.
Yeah, you can't deal with the person talking to you?
I'd have to tell him.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I can't, you know... It's like even Adam at work says, sometimes my filter's just all wrong. You know? I'm just like, particularly if you, it's why I when forums first became a thing, it was kind of like when I was sort of like in the early days of the business, I thought, it'll be good for the business. I'll go on there, I'll do the forums and I'll try and give people advice and help, you know? And then there's always some Wally telling you that you're wrong. And I'm like, I know I'm not wrong.
Yeah.
What do you mean? You know, and I'm like, and I'd get really quite, you know, wound up by it. And then I think, right, that's I'm just not doing this anymore. This is just ridiculous. You know, I can't, you know, how can you tell me, you know, how that works? I know how it works, you know, and it just, you know, I just get really, so when you've got someone there that's, you know, I've been to a lot of car shows and I've seen a lot of fields and listened to a lot of chat.
I've seen a lot of fields is actually a great quote for cars.
Yeah. And it's, and I'm probably, my tolerance for it has probably worn away a little bit.
Do you just hit me with okay. And then start to try and edge off. You try and walk up.
Yeah. Well, look, the exact thing that you're describing has happened to me a lot. You know,
You are in Jaguar.
So yeah,
you
are, tough.
You're in this prime. Is when I'm in Jaguar world. So, like, if we go to, you know, the the concourse shows and stuff like that. So I used to do a lot of concourse stuff, like, you know, like really big time into it. And we won, you know, we did very, very well at it, you know, but oh my God, some of the people that do it, you know, there's something wrong with them. You know, whereas me and my mate Max and Lee that used to do it, you know, we would have a laugh with it. It was good fun, you know, and we'd rib each other, and some of them are just sort of, why do you take it that seriously? And that, you know, it's like your life depends on it, you know? And, you know, it's like, oh, you know, you do realize that that's the wrong Jubilee clip on that hose, don't you? And I'm like, yeah, but it's not leaking, is it? You know, it's like, and it can become all consuming.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's just, and it was, you know, like, I've always, one of my customers always wanted to get a car to Pebble Beach. You know, we've kind of sort of like something that we still want to do.
You know?
It's, but you have to be very dedicated to.
But these people are petrified of driving the thing.
Mm. Oh no, you can't drive it.
No,
you can't drive it.
No,
don't be silly.
Must be trailer there.
We were trailing in there.
I must put the mirrors under the rear so you can see the undercarriage.
3 miles from wherever we got to go, because the rule of the concourse stuff that we did, they had to be driven to the event. It didn't say how far. Yeah, so we would literally trailer them not far from the event, and then we'd get there, and then we'd jack the thing up, right? And then we'd take all four wheels off, we'd clean the inside of the wheels, we'd clean all the underneath. And we had a routine where every winter, the suspension would come out year one, right? And then you'd change every single plated nut and bolt, da-da-da-da-da. And this was when we were doing the V12 one. And then the next winter, we'd do all the stuff under the bonnet.
Switching every year.
Yeah. And I had spare plated pipes and all of these bits and pieces that I'd have to sort around. So I pretty much had two of everything so that we didn't lose too much workshop time. So I could bring the car in, drop the suspension out, swap all the plated bits over, and then we'd do the stuff under the bonnet. And then if we got to this thing, what was called Champ and the Champions, which was like, it was invitation only. It was always held up at the NEC, and it was considered like the Jaguar concourse thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been 5 or 6 times and I've come second 5 or 6 times, and it's like, you know, you're always the bridesmaid, never the bride. So, you know, and it's just like, and then you go there the next year and you haven't qualified that year, or you haven't done the right shows to go. And then there'll be, you know, the 5 or 6 cars in there with what I would describe as substandard. And then a car that was nowhere near as good as ours would then walk away with it. And I'd be like, oh God, I can't believe it. You know, we picked the wrong year again, you know, because we would be doing, but then we done, it was called Autoglim. I think it's Maguire's now. Big concourse thing is run by Maguire's, but it used to be Autoglim. So we won the Autoglim quite a few times.
So, okay. So you were in those circles then?
Oh yeah. Yeah. We were right up there. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Will, what are you choosing in that instance?
I'd choose the driving one, but I would drive into the back of the person.
Use a pavement over there.
Whichever one, it's the violent option.
Yeah.
Or that person, then just tell them exactly what's going on. You thought of that because we were looking at, there was an auction however long ago, and there was a Z3 that was meant to look like a DB4 Zagato or something like that. And it obviously wasn't. It looked like, as the interior was...
A Z3.
It was dire.
Yeah.
Mm. It was a Z3 with some retrimmed bits in it. But in the middle of the
dash, your MR2.
Yeah, pretty much. But in the middle of the dash, there was this little like card holder, and there were printed out cards with pictures of the car on it. And it said above it, please take a card. And it's like,
And did you?
I know that. No, this was online, but I want to know what was on it. But I know what it'll be. It'll be this, nice car.
Built in 1962, the Aston Martin DB. You know, it isn't. It's not what it is.
It's Z3 with a 1.9, probably.
Like, I'm completely fine with if your goal is to own an unobtainium car, you want to build a replica of that car. I get it. Completely fine. But why are you then being like, come and look at this car? It's not it. It is. It's fine that you like it and you want it, but don't try and make me think it is.
Don't force me in.
Because it's not. It's not
go
how it is.
Knocking door to door and go, have you seen my replica DB4?
Just picked up the £1 million. What else have we got?
People want to do what they want to do, but it's slightly odd.
So would you, are you not very good at like driving down the motorway where people are being a little bit wally-ish? Can you not just sort of like back off and just go, no. Do you know what?
Depends on the car.
I am better now, actually. I would say I'm better now.
You reformed.
But I do a lot of undertaking.
But undertaking's not illegal.
I think it might be.
No!
Driving laws with need, Tom.
I was under the impression that undertaking is not illegal. I was under the understanding.
Mr. Officer, I was under the understanding that I could do this.
Like, if someone's going less than the speed limit and then you're not breaking the speed limit and you just go past them on the inside lane.
That is undertaking.
Because they're sat in the middle, yeah, which is undertaking, yes. I do not believe that is illegal.
You might not believe it.
I can't believe it.
I don't think they do you for undertaking. I think that they do you for driving without due care, attention, or dangerous driving, or something of those sorts of lines.
If you're not being a penis about it, if someone is being quite clearly doing 55 and they're not moving out of the way and they've got space, and you were to slowly go around them, I don't think they're going to throw the book at you.
I was driving down the motorway the other day, and it did actually. I haven't seen this before. It did say, "Don't hog the middle lane."
Yeah, I love it.
And I was like, I've not seen that. Yeah. And I was like,
Did you see anyone change? Did you see anyone make a conscious effort to do it?
It was like an advert for it. I was driving and there was someone a long way ahead. I haven't got up to them yet. And as they got to the sign up in the distance, I watched them move over into the left. Yeah. I was like, that's amazing.
I was so pleased to see that.
Yeah.
Because I think in this country, our lane hogging or whatever, our driving etiquette in that respect is terrible. Oh, we're rubbish. We are really, really bad.
You can tell Tom hasn't listened to the Cream podcast before, because that's basically what we talk about every week.
But if you go to France or into Europe,
it's so good.
They understand the difference between
the fact
being an absolute arse and using the road properly.
The fact that they are taught to have the indicator on to remind them that they are overtaking. They are not sitting in a lane. They are.
Is that why they do that?
I believe it's what my dad told me, and they do that in Holland as well. Sometimes, rarely, but in France, it's to say you're not sitting in a lane.
I just thought they were all really forgetful.
French music on, and I can't hear it. He said tikka tokka.
But yeah, because you're not. It's not a lane. It's not a driving lane. It's an overtaking lane. You're there to overtake and then move back in. It's great. The amount of times that I've been late for the Channel Tunnel, and simply due to the fact that people understand you can still drive at the speed limit and make up time. It's actually incredible.
You have to be a criminal here to do that. So you have to break the law in order to drive efficiently in this country. I think the only place you can undertake legally is in an average speed check and on a slip road.
So have you actually looked this up?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And what did it?
I'm fairly sure that was as far as I'm aware. Someone will know probably, but it's average speed checks you can undertake. Obviously, within you can't just do 90 through it. But if someone's in a, because I don't think you're meant to change lanes in like a 50 mile.
So what you're saying is you can undertake in an average speed camera area. Yeah.
Because it's normally like 50 or 60 miles.
Yeah. But you could get done for speeding if you're going too fast, but you won't get done for undertaking.
Yes, exactly. And on a slip road, which makes sense, because if there's like traffic on the motorway and I can't go past.
I simply couldn't.
But yeah, that's it. But yeah, undertaking is, I get it. It's because there have been times where I've seen someone undertaking me and I've gone to undertake and then someone else is undertaking, but I didn't spot them because they're in your blind spot. So I get it, but.
So I was driving down the motorway a couple of days ago and described it as surfing, and I don't really understand. It's basically this guy was just like weaving.
Yeah, crazy.
Fishing. Like fishing.
Fishing. I've heard surfing say before. That's I think what they call it in New York.
Yeah, but he was flat out. I mean, he was really going for knitting. It, and I thought, oh my God, this is going to get messy in a minute.
It is crazy.
And there was a couple of them.
Really?
Once one went in. Then
were they all in one series BMWs?
No, they were, I think it was a BMW actually.
Okay. Lots of BMWs. Yeah, I actually saw one.
I think it was a three series.
It was a three series.
Yeah, sorry.
That checks out.
Yeah.
Wild.
What we got? Would you like? Well,
what else we got? We do have some more questions for Tom. You put in here quad pipes.
Quad pipe. This is just a quick aside. What? Okay. Early 2000s. I remember when the E46 M3 came out, thinking a six-cylinder car with quad exhaust that can't run. That doesn't feel right. Quad exhausts are for things with V8s, V10s, V12s.
Okay.
Recently, I saw this. That is a Mini Countryman JCW with quad pipes from a factory. Mm. That is a four-cylinder, three-cylinder, I don't know. And then, I mean, kind of related, same thing. New BMW 1 Series M1 through 5i, quad pipes.
You know what I believe broke this trend?
What's that?
It's the Golf R.
Because that's true.
I actually can't think of something off the top of my head. I'm sure there will be before that didn't.
Yeah.
Because remember the Golf R came. Obviously, there was a Golf R, which was twin, like an R32, two tailpipes.
Cool. Fine.
So what is it you object to?
It's too many pipes. It's you don't have the balls to back up the pipes. You know, there is a quad pipe should mean you have V8, V10 noise.
It's like having a six pack.
Exactly. There's something wrong about a four cylinder. But yet, when you said that, Golf R does have quad pipes now, and I don't feel that bad about it.
It's weird. It kind of differentiates it from a GTI. So there's that thing.
Whereas that just feels, there's no reason for that to have four pipes.
Also, M car, like on a Golf, fine, whatever, do what you like. M cars with quad pipes, that's it. You can't go putting quad pipes on your one series M thing, whatever that is.
Yeah, it should be a 1M only. Yeah. But I don't know. I just saw the Countryman and thought that's not allowed. Four pipes on a Mini Countryman, straight up not allowed.
I don't get that. I think the one series they're quite sort of like, you know, for hitting a young cool market, aren't they?
Okay, yeah.
So I kind of get it because it's a styling.
But the Countryman though,
it's a styling thing, isn't it?
No. Well, I guess maybe that's what they're going for. They're going for the ultimate drivers. The Surthy drivers who are like, I might pick up the Countryman.
But they're not going to buy that, are they?
I know. But who?
So no, I kind of see where you're going from, you know, on this point, from this point of view, you know.
But a mini should have a single little pea shooter, just at a little crooked angle, just like an original Mini.
See, I just love the way that you take real offence to it. It's great.
I really do. it should
You know,
exist.
It's like, oh, he's really quite annoyed him.
it does. I was driving on the moto this morning and thought, why do you have it?
Sometimes it's nice to have no tailpipes. Like on my Range Rover, I have no desire to have tailpipes. Yet there are lots of Range Rover owners who are like, I need four exhausts and a back box delete. And a seven on like, I'm talking more like luxury or like comfort. You know,
see,
like
I don't understand blinging up a Range Rover like that. You know, I know lots of people like the Overfinches and all that sort of stuff. I don't get it.
No.
I just sort of think, why would, you know, what's the point in having a luxury 4x4 which is supposed to be comfy and wafty down the road and all that, and then stick 23-inch wheels on it and, you know, and slam
low profile
it.
Tires.
Yeah. It just kind of defeats the object of the point of the thing. Yeah. But then I also think the manufacturers are just as
well, I think that's the thing.
Bad now.
The manufacturers watch people going out and buying the kits and going, well, we might as well make the money off this.
Yeah.
Let's make our car look dumb.
So, you know, don't we? A Range Rover Sport SVR 5-litre supercharged is a very cool car. And they've got like buckety type seats in it and all that. It's very, very, very cool. You know, but you drive it down the road, you know, I wouldn't daily my Project 8 because it's quite a harsh, you know, it's not terrible, but it's quite a harsh car. Yeah. And the same reason why I wouldn't buy an SVR Range Rover, because
it's for people from Birmingham.
It's not comfy. It's not comfortable.
It's a bit. It's also that it's the show off's Range Rover. Not that a Range Rover is like that subtle and understated, but you can be. There is an element of taste or class with a Range Rover that an SVR absolutely demolishes in every way.
Do you drive a Range Rover because you feel as though it lifts your profile? Is that what you're saying?
No. I like it because I think they are actually very good cars.
Yeah.
But I do also quite like the fact that I feel like a royal, or at least the driver of a royal.
Do you drive down America going,
fantastic. Let me go. Thank you very much.
So I don't have a Range Rover because they are just a brilliant car.
They are.
They're a brilliant car.
Agreed. I agree with that. Many of you will disagree, but we've got Tom on the podcast and he just confirmed it. I want to talk about Mate Remac.
Sure. Here's one I made earlier.
This is a video from a little while back.
Do you know who this is?
No.
Tom? Interesting.
Do you know what Remac is?
Sorry?
Do you know what a Remac is?
No.
I actually think it might be to do with shaving legs, Remac. But the actual Remac.
Do you mean Imac?
Is that not the same thing?
Do you mean the Manscaped Bull Trimmer 9000?
Not sponsored. Remac is, Matty Remac is CEO of Remac, which is an electric car company. They make ridiculous.
That's why I don't know about it.
Yeah. But I mean, they are quite insane. It's a 2000 horsepower. I think one of them just did a ridiculous record, the Navara or whatever.
Right, okay.
But anyway, they now own or part own whatever, Bugatti.
Oh, right,
They are currently working on the new Bugatti, which is a V16 Tourbillon. But Top Gear just did a video with Rimac. And Rimac is a bit sort of a young prodigy CEO.
Yeah.
I want to say he's probably still in his 20s.
And out of interest, what do you think he would drive?
What's a daily?
He's like a CEO type thing of a
CEO of Bugatti and electric car manufacturer Rimac.
Anything? Do you think he was driving anything interesting?
Well, you would think so. I suspect he's. You're going to tell me it's something like he's going to run around in a Saxo or something stupid like that.
I mean, here you go. So Top Gear. I mean, Will, you know the headline stats from before, but Top Gear have got a very good video. It's an E46 M3 CSL,
which he has two of.
Other headlines: a Carrera GT, a E39 M5. It's not a high mileage one. It's quite a lot. It's a nice one.
No, but it uses it
by no means like a show car. And basically, most of these cars. Some of these are his friends. Like a Z4M coupe.
He's got a Beetle down the end there.
He's got all sorts of bits and bobs. And he drives an R32 Golf.
Yeah, the R32 Golf was, it didn't surprise me the most, but it was like, it's just a blue R32 Golf. So there's nothing that like special about it, but he's just.
So he's got some quite normal cars.
Yeah. But that's, I don't know, but it, compared to what I saw the other day, which was it was the official BMW plate that's been owned by BMW for quite some time. So I believe it's a COO or CEO of UK or MD, sorry. Being driven around in the rear of a 7 Series.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, man. You are in control of BMW M. Do something like this.
There's a clip in this video where they I think they're going elsewhere. So they go out on a Rimac. Firstly, Mate asks him here which way the camera's facing. And he says, oh, it's only facing into us. And he went, okay, good. So obviously he wants to go and do some speed. And then he just does some donuts in the car park. So he's one of the coolest CEOs because, again, he's into cars. And even he admits that people are not uptaking electric cars. Mm-hmm. And that's why the new Bugatti is going to have this ridiculous, it's Cosworth engine.
Mm.
I want to say it's a V16 now. High revving, ridiculous horsepower. It's a little bit lighter. But it's actually a really, really interesting video. And you can tell that Rimac, he's a CEO, but he knows what he's talking about. He hasn't been given a spec list and gone, and this is the car.
Yeah,
and he's a dream podcast guest.
Mm.
I think.
so what? How long have they been building it for? How many units they shifted and all the rest of it?
Of Rimac of Bugatti?
No.
I think Rimac's been around since what, 2010, 2012.
Rimac's been around way a while. Oh, wow, words. Mm-hmm. Rimac has been around for a while. But again, even in this video, he admits that they haven't sold as many as they
hoped to,
wanted to. They said they've sold a good amount. It's an expensive car, but he's not that bothered by it because he said the work that they put into Rimac is now what they now put into, that they sell to most manufacturers for sort of hybrid and battery tech.
Some
manufacturers they can't even talk about because they're not like allowed to mention it yet.
So he's a bit of an Elon Musk, isn't he, is what you're saying?
Yeah, I actually met him years ago when we worked at Car Throttle. Me and Evian, who we used to work with, we went down to, I think it was Berkeley Square somewhere, and they had a concept version of one of these Rimacs, and we met him. I want to say he was in his early 20s at the time, which is insane to me. And there's a few bits he talked about there and whatever else, but I'm fairly sure he took an E30 when he was younger as a teen and converted it to electric. And but he's just quite interesting. But normally when you get someone like that, they're sort of electric. That's all they want to do. It's electric.
But he
also has an interest in.
Yeah, but then it goes back to what I said. You are allowed to like other stuff.
Exactly.
You don't have to.
You haven't got to be one thing.
Yeah. Like I say, you don't have to have the blinkers on and you're.
Is that a 1620?
Yeah, sorry. I was just doing quickly a bit of research. One of the first things he built after his E30 was an electric VX220.
Wow.
And I've just noticed there's a bit of damage here on the left light, which means he's got no lens like your car.
Oh, amazing.
So you and Mate, you've got stuff to talk about.
Look, we can get him on. We're relatable. So if anyone listens to the podcast, the next post he has on Instagram, spam the living hell out
please,
of it. We need to get his attention somehow.
He's going to go, block.
do you think he'll remember you from all those years ago?
No, not at all. We were in a room of a million different journalists probably asking the same questions over and over again.
Fair enough.
But yeah, he's. I just wanted to, because it's a cool video.
Very cool.
I recommend going and watching it. Right, the Renault 5 that I've got, we mentioned earlier, that we have from press from Renault. Has a funny feature that you may have seen. It is quite quirky inside. It's very retro, but it has an AI feature that I'm going to say we've abused it.
We have.
We took it out to lunch for the first time today. And actually, you mentioned it. I'd forgotten about it.
Yeah.
You said, doesn't this have the AI thing?
Because there's the clip of Johnny Smith and radio DJ
Greg James,
talking about it back at the launch. I thought, I wonder if it still has it. Looked it up on Google. Yes, you just have to say, hey, Renault.
Which we were saying Reno.
Yes, for some reason. But it did understand us.
It did understand it. And we pushed it to its limits, and we have realised there are certain things it won't do, but there are many things it will do. Yeah. We spent, I'm going to say it was about 40 minutes.
About 40 minutes in the car.
No music at all. But it doesn't do any music. We were just asking the AI questions. We'd say, hey, Reno, can you do this sum for me? Or, well, what did we actually
do? Well, one of the best ones was, can you tell us a story about a bald man, but in Jamaican patois, in the accent of Jamaican patois? And it did it. It will do it.
It won't quite do the accent. I think it's a bit touchy, but it will speak as if it's...
It will. Anything phallic doesn't want to do it. It will say, I can't do that. But Ben, you managed to get around it by saying...
appendage?
Medical terms, happy with. Robin asked about a fart earlier, and he said flatulence.
Okay.
And that worked as well.
Yeah. So. It also quite likes if you just ask it to say things back multiple times, it will do that. So Ben got it saying the word egg perhaps 15 times.
And beans was said a lot as well.
Yeah, lots of beans.
But it will just do anything you ask it to. And before this, I was asking Tom, do you use AI for anything? And he was like, I don't understand.
Well, no. Tom briefly saw it earlier.
I like the Renault 5, by the way. Even I was like, I like this as a car. It's quite cool. But yeah, me and AI, I just...
You're not mates yet?
No. It's one of those things that are potentially that we may be using it for something, but I just wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I've you no could idea. Be AI yourself. How would you know?
Who knows? Yeah, yeah.
Real Tom's at home.
Yeah. I'm just,
go and do this dumb podcast, please.
I struggle with, I don't struggle with technology. That's not true. But, I'm also probably at a stage where I don't really want to
learn anything new.
No, I can't be asked.
Yeah, fair.
What you said earlier about just sending clips of you recording your PC monitor. You messaged me and asked to check out a car for car vertical. So I did that, sent it to you. The immediate response to that was a clip, which was a video of you racing, which I noticed was you filming your screen.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
No. Not the most tech savvy, but.
No.
I guess you don't need to be. Yeah.
No. It's easy, isn't it?
Yeah.
You
need to know people who are tech savvy.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. If you're not good at something, like I say, just get someone else to do it. It's fine. Isn't it? Just get on with what you're good at.
Right. Well, there's a. I've got
a link. So we actually got DM'd this by a gentleman the other day who said, I was watching an old episode of Wheeler Dealers. And randomly enough, it was on an old Jaguar XK8. I was reading this message and I was like, well, what are we talking about? So I clicked the link and there it is. There's a young Tom Lenthal in this video. What do you?
That was a few years
2009,
ago. 2009, 2010. It was about cool. My old XJS. It would have been about 2010, 2011 tops.
Because
it was about 15 years ago.
The funny thing was there was the guy that messaged me. I wish I had his name. But he messaged the TDC account and said, there's a young Tom Lenthal in a Wheel of Dealers episode. Is the moment he said just the episode, I remembered. Because when I lived in South Africa, the only real car program that they had on TV was reruns of Wheel of Dealers.
Yeah.
And I remembered vividly, I already knew the episode, meaning I was just in Africa just watching Tom Lenthal as a child. Just like, look at this guy.
Yeah, in about 10, 15 years, that man's going to abuse me.
God, look how slim I was there. Jesus Christ, what's I going to do with getting back
so
to that?
So was that your first media, in what do you call it, appearance?
Yes, it probably was, definitely, yeah.
And was it a bit random? Where did they just ring you up and say, we just need some parts, can we come film you?
Well, it was weird because they'd already bought the parts off of someone else, right?
Oh, interesting.
Now, this is, I can tell you, it doesn't really matter now because it's such a long time ago. So back then, Wheeler Dealers was run by a company called Attaboy TV, which is the production company. And they had bought these parts from one of my suppliers who was up north, but they didn't have time to do filming. So then they said, oh, well, Tom's near you. Give Tom a ring. He'll blah, 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 blah. So I went, and that's what happened, right? But then it subsequently turned out that, do you remember that there used to be a guy called Paul that would always help out Paul, Ed?
Yeah,
yeah, Paul Brackley. Yeah, so I know him because he lives just down the road. So I've known him for years.
He's the guy who never speaks at all.
He can speak, I promise you. So then we helped them out with that. So we basically got them out of trouble because the filming thing all went up. So they said to me, do you do exhaust, you do this, you do that. So I said, yeah, I've got it all set here. So then they came down and we did the filming. Yeah, it was quite, But that took, this is the difference between doing stuff with YouTube. I had to shut the workshop down for a whole day for that.
Really? Yeah. A whole day?
A whole day, right? And then what happened was then I think they messed a bit of the footage up. I don't know why. And then they had to come back and they had to film again.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. They, and he's going, oh, we have you still got all the same cars there? And, you know, so we had to sort of set it up. So, you know.
It looks similar.
So it looks similar and I had to wear the same clothes and all that bollocks. So,
God.
And it was, yeah, it was, yeah, but it was all complete rubbish. I didn't sell him anything.
Breaking news. Yeah. Yeah. Leaked on TDC podcast years later. Yeah.
But then, because we kind of got on with it, then they did a few other Jags. They did a Mark II Jag and they did a coupe. And all those cars ended up coming to the workshop and we helped them out.
Interesting. Yeah. And did you see a boost from that ever? Or did anybody ever say, I saw you on
the
Wheeler Dealer?
Day. Right. So this is literally the phone lit up.
Really?
It went bonkers. Right. So they came to me. It was a grill that I had and an exhaust system. Yeah. I sold so many exhausts. It was just bonkers. And it was just, because don't forget, there wasn't really the outlets that you have today.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
You know, like you say, if you were a car nerd and you wanted to watch, you know, content, you had Top Gear, Fifth Gear, Wheeler Dealer, you know, it was pretty limited, you know.
Yeah.
And most of us didn't really, I wouldn't spend money on Sky TV so I could see Wheeler Dealers. You know, someone had to record it for me and put it on a CD so I could watch, you know. But then the next, I think it was about 3 weeks later, I'm at a car show, a Jag, you know, car show, so it's all, and then that was when it freaked me out because everyone's like, "Ooh, that's the bloke off of you know," and that's the first time when I actually realised I was like, "Oh, this is a bit weird," you know. It felt a bit.
I'm a bit famous.
Well, it's not even that. It's that I've got no desire to be like famous. I'd find that quite scary.
Mm.
Where
yeah.
you literally walk down the high street or whatever and you can't. I don't like that.
No.
I don't mind doing the car stuff. It's all right. You know, it's a bit of a laugh, isn't it? But yeah, I wouldn't want to have that kind of fame.
You're known within your circles.
Yeah, I've always wanted to be, people know me for being able to do my job well.
Yeah.
You know, exactly, that's I've always wanted. I've sort of like crave that sort of notoriety or whatever, you know, for being a good mechanic basically, you know. But as for any other reason, not really,
Ben, you would have been 7 when that program came out, 2009. That's a crazy one.
A young boy
Ben. What else we got anything else?
There's a couple more questions for Tom now. Obviously you talked about your car collection that you have right now. Yeah. Is there anything you would still like to add to that?
Oh God, yeah, loads.
Couple from your list that you'd like to add?
I'll call it one of the week.
Yeah, yeah. So I've said that I've got too many cars.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what happens is if you get to a certain level of cars, then you can't actually maintain and use them. It becomes a full-time job trying to do that. So yeah, have you noticed? Now I've sort of like set myself a limit of cars. Mm. So if I'm going to have another car, then one's got to go. And you know. So for a daily, I'll keep on going on about this. I'd quite fancy daily in an E46.
Oh, hello.
Yeah.
An M3.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I've never had one. I've never had a BMW.
What color? You don't care.
I don't really care. Yeah.
I knew that was coming. I was really waiting for that.
Yeah. The trouble is, all the ones I tell you what I don't want a silver one with black interior, right? Okay. And there just seems to be an awful lot of those about.
That's like 60% of
Yeah, and I just think, why were they that unspired? And then I think, well, you know, look at your average BMW owner. It's hardly surprising they're silver with black interiors, are they? You know, so, you know, I mean, come on, you know. Anyway, so I do quite fancy one of those just because I've never really done that thing.
Yeah.
I want a 911 at some point.
Of old variety or new variety?
I think probably 997.
Okay, so late 2000s, early 2010s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sort of 2006, 2007.
Yeah,
about 20-year-old one. I think I don't want to.
You're not a Porsche man in my head. You really
no, are. But I do quite I've driven a few over the years, and you can't get away from the fact they're good.
Yeah.
You know, they are a very, very good car. And I want to own a Ferrari. Fair. At some point.
I was about to get into that because we spoke to you recently.
Mm-hmm.
About you driving. Are you driving a couple of Ferraris recently?
I've been test driving a few Ferraris.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As you do.
Any further with that or any more Ferraris driven?
Well, what happened was I then got offered a car which I wasn't expecting to get offered. And it opened up an opportunity which has basically chewed away the Ferrari fund.
Oh.
This is the thing you told us about.
Is this the thing? I'm not really, you know.
You don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah, it will be. I will. Once I've got it in the garage.
It's rather special though. It's worth not having a Ferrari for.
Yes, I was prepared to sacrifice the Ferrari for a few years.
That's quite cool.
Yeah. So there are, but then also, you know, I don't know, other things have happened. Like, you know, we've looked at the cars that we've got and said, right, okay, we definitely want to keep that for a bit. We're happy to sell that. So let's shift them around. Mm. So it just depends what gets sold and how quickly stuff gets sold and what's happening. So I've sold me, I've got an Aston Martin as well, haven't I?
I forgot the list.
The DB7 Vantage, but I've now...
You sold that.
I've taken a deposit on it, so someone else has. So that's one gone.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a couple of them. So anyway, once things start going, then I'll
look again.
Yeah, I've promised Meg that I will not buy any more cars until this is sold, that's sold. So I've also got an Evoque and a Disco 4 and some other bits and pieces kicking around, which is just sort of general stuff around at work.
So the question is, where are you going to hide the cars that you buy from her when you buy them inevitably them?
This is the problem that I have, right? Okay, So because Meg does all of the administration.
Oh, you can't hide anything.
You can't hide anything, right? And she learned really, I mean, we've done it to ourselves, right? As in the male race. Yeah. Because we can't help ourselves but lie, right? Because we're just natural born liars, right? And for lots of different reasons. Normally due to our indiscretion somewhere along the line, whether they be physical or what, you know. So the amount of chaps over the years that I've had come into the workshop and like, right, I want this tuning done and that done and whatever, you know, it's always the toy cars as well.
Yeah.
Not, you know, oh my God.
Not the daily.
Oh no, I need a new set of tires. The wife's going to go mad, you know, on the daily. It's the toy cars and they'll pay 50% of the bill on a credit card or whatever.
Yeah.
And then 50% of the bill in cash.
Yeah. To hide it.
Or they'll pay it from two separate accounts and stuff like that. And Meg was like, what are they doing that for? And I go, oh, I really don't know, mate.
I do it all the time. I don't know why.
Yeah, I just couldn't possibly think why they're doing that. So obviously, clearly, you know, she's worked out, you know, quite cottoned on quite quickly that, you know, that these chaps were hiding the bills from or the true expense of this from their wives.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I remember once I was working on this guy's old Mark II Jaguar, right? And on those, you pull the I needed to take the seat out. I needed something to do the seat. I've pulled the seat swab up and it like, so it's a metal frame and then the leather bit sits on the frame. I pulled it up and underneath there is a plastic bag with 10 grand in cash in it. Right? And I'm like, oh, so I've ring him up.
Ring him up and say, mate, your 10 grand's gone. I don't know where it's gone.
Yeah. I was going, well, I didn't know it was 10 grand at the time. I rung him up. I was like, there's, you know, I just found a load of money. And I said, oh, yeah. Yeah, okay, yeah. Don't whatever you do, don't mention that to the missus when you bring it back, you know. And I'm just like, you know, so Meg's very very aware that, you know, of this sort of stuff. So I can't get away with it basically. she knows, but bless her, she does support me. She says I know what I'm doing.
Oh, fair enough.
She seems to think that, you know, that sometimes we, you know, I do make good decisions with the stuff that we buy and it goes and we do all right with it. So
Ferrari incoming then.
Yeah.
she didn't flinch when I said about a Ferrari, you know, she was like, yeah, okay, fine. Well,
to be fair, when you're used to Jaguar Land Rover problems, I don't think there's much that can make, you know, scare you.
Ferrari, oh, finally a reliable vehicle.
Yeah.
So you drove a 550?
I drove a 550. And
a Testarossa.
Yeah,
which is very cool.
So my summary of it was that a 550 is a really, it's a very, very nice car, but I just found it boring. You know, for me, if you're going to spend that much money on a car, it needs to, it didn't grab me and excite myself. It's a very, very, very good car. It's a very, very nice interior. It's a nice space to sit in.
Did it have a standard exhaust?
I think it was totally standard. Yeah.
I'd seen a lot of people mentioning, for people that don't know, we are on Monday next week going to drive. Will's going to drive a Gallardo. I'm going to drive a 550 Maranello as a do you meet your heroes or not? Yeah. We both would like in our life to own one of those cars.
Yeah.
I've been doing a lot of research and a lot of people say, so they've got the standard exhaust. They don't sound like anything.
It wasn't like, look, it's got plenty of punch. You can drive a manual.
Yes. Yeah. All 550s are manual.
Are they?
Only 575 you could get the auto.
See, I didn't know that. Okay. So yeah, there's something about, it's cool about driving a Ferrari with that, you know, the gate there and everything. And it's, but I actually found it quite slow to change gear.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
It wasn't, you know, I could change gear a lot quicker if it wasn't, you know, if the setup was different. So, but again, it's part of the romance of it, isn't it? It's part of the driving experience. And when I got on the motorway and I gave it some punch, you know, it did everything that a Ferrari should do. And the clutch was all right. The clutch wasn't too heavy. So that was all good.
It's a front engine.
It's a front
V12
engine
Ferrari. So it's not that it's not designed to be exciting. It's just, it's not. It's not a mid-engine car.
It's a GT cruiser.
Yeah, it's GT. It's built for.
Yeah, exactly. It's a GT car. It's a different. So then you go and drive a Testarossa, which is not a GT car. It's, you know, it's a fire-breathing V12. And I like old cars. Yeah. So, and I used to think I wanted a 328. You know, so why are these poster cars for you? So a 328 is a poster car for me because of Magnum. I don't know if you remember the TV series.
All the time.
Yeah. And then of course, you know, the Testarossa is because of Miami Vice, isn't it? You know, that's, you know, and they were poster cars for us. I don't think I could live with the Testarossa.
No. Even as a special occasion car?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm really glad that I got to drive it. It was a real experience, but I was just surprised how noisy it was, you know. And but I don't mean as in like engine noise. It's also just
everything.
Just, you know, I was literally, you know, I was Harry Metcalf, wasn't I? Harry came to see me and, you know, I'd spoken to him about driving the Testarossa and he very kindly brought it down and we went out for a drive together. I'm literally, we're shouting at each other. And he goes, this is the full Testarossa experience. And I'm like, yes. And I'm, do you know what? I'm so glad that I drove it. But it made me not want it, which I wasn't expecting to happen at all. I really wasn't.
Very, very worthwhile a point for testing a car before you buy it, before you commit to it.
Especially
something older.
I mean, don't get me wrong. If I'd have gone to buy a sales one or whatever, I would have taken it for a drive and I would have got a bit of, I would have felt embarrassed actually because I would have wasted their time.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? As people say in adverts, you know, no one wants test pilots, do they?
Yeah.
You know, so, but you do need to test pilot certain things to make a buying decision.
Especially on an expensive car like that.
Oh, yeah. You can't just drop it at a whim, you know. And so, but then, where do you go with the whole Ferrari thing if you want something red and shiny with a black horse on it? You know, it's so.
What is it you want out of the Ferrari? Is it something that's a bit more exciting or is it?
Like, I just think it's an itch that needs to be scratched. It's got that kind of thing, isn't it? But.
It feels like you something mid-engine.
Yeah.
I've decided that the next one that I need to try is a 430.
That's what I was thinking. So if depending on how the far the budget goes, 360 Challenge.
Stradale. No, I've driven a couple of 360s. I don't like them.
No, but what about Challenge Stradale? Because they're supposedly a completely different animal.
A Stradale, they still have that gearbox. That's true. That is always the problem with those.
Everyone goes on about the 355 being the last of the sort of like proper Ferraris, as they say, you know, but I drove a 355 20 odd years ago and I wasn't that impressed. No, I wasn't that blown away.
I think 430, I think you'd probably like. I think would it be, was it a Spider or a Coupe?
Oh, coupes, covered roof.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. No. And I'm less fussed about it being a manual at the moment.
Well, you'd spend quite a lot now for a 430 manual.
Yeah, 430 manuals are about 120.
I think they're a bit more now. I think yeah, they're up 200.
No, they're not.
I think they are.
No, they're not.
I think the last time I saw it, anyway, but anyway, they're now selling for big money.
I've looked, don't worry. Okay. 120, 130 will get you into a 430 manual.
That's double. Price, yeah, basically, for 4A. Stage,
yeah. But you can get into an auto or the, you know, whatever.
F1.
F1.
But that's a good, well, again.
For 70, something
it's
like
not that, it's an old gearbox, but that era of Ferrari F1 gearbox is leaps and bounds ahead of the old F1
gearbox. The 360.
Gearbox. Obviously, it's no dual clutch auto thing, but they're not as bad.
I nearly bought a 360 10 years ago because one of my customers had one for sale and I let it go over $2,000. I offered him 40 for it and he wanted 42 and I walked away.
But you're happy with the fact you walked away?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
I don't want that.
Well, no. You have to. I'm a firm believer in setting yourself rules.
Fair.
So I went to an auction to go and buy a P8 and I was like, right, I'm not going over 100K. That's it, 100K, absolute tops. And it went for, the guy outbid me. He was the next bid up and I thought, well, that's going to make it. If I now bid, he ended up paying 98 grand for it with premium and I would have been at like 10, if I'd have bid, I would have been at like 103, 104. And I was like, no, that's it, bang. So it's good to be strict on yourself like that.
Yeah, agreed. Because also the thing with auctions is you never know where they're going to stop. So yeah, you tell yourself, fine, I'll go one, but they might be willing to go 5 or 6 bids more. And you might get way out over your head.
Oh, yeah.
And then
before
you realise, oops.
Yeah, whenever I've gone to an auction to buy stuff, I've always been right. That's my limit.
Top limit.
You know, but unless I've done it for customers, a couple of customers have sent me to an auctions and they're like, I bought it. Just spent a little bit more than we did.
We're not like that. We haven't gone over anything we've bid on.
What was the Clio? We said,
£500? Oh, the
Clio V6 we bid on, which was, there was a non-runner and whatever else, but that's a 30, 40 grand
ten,
car.
10 was the beginning of the top end of bid.
I think we were kind of saying like 15 is absolutely no more than that.
Yeah.
I think we bid up to about 18
we
grand.
We got 17 or 18.
So I get in from what you're doing next week that you're into the Lambos then?
Yes, yeah.
Really? So I wouldn't have put you as a Lambo man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. To me, that is supercar. Ferrari is good super. Again, like that is the supercar like name that everyone think of, but to me, that if you think of a supercar, if you ask a child to draw or think of a supercar, they're going to give you something that roughly comes out as a Lamborghini.
So what about when it comes to design and stuff like that?
Ferraris are prettier and or older, probably classier, but the Lamborghini has that. Not modern stuff. I'm less bothered by.
Well, I was about to say old stuff. Well, Lamborghini is the king of making stuff look mental and cool.
Yeah.
Ferraris, for me, last 10 years of Ferrari, that I can't really think with it. Other than an F8, it's just nothing that even makes me feel anything.
Yeah.
I mean, like an 812 is cool, but I'm not. I don't know. I don't look at it in the same way that I look at like an Enzo or something from older. Yeah. You know, 2000s.
But sort of pre-2010.
But Lamborghini still tends to put out stuff, even an Aventador. I'm not an Aventador man, but I look at it and I go, whoa, that's cool.
If you see see an Aventador coming down the road, you know, or you hear it before. Whereas your equivalent Ferrari, I don't think has the same effect.
Yeah, there's always this thing that Enzo Ferrari turned around and said that he thought that the E-Type Jag was one of the most beautiful cars ever made. And I agree with him in that. But I think a Miura is just an absolute design classic. And
I watched the beginning of The Italian Job on YouTube regularly. I don't watch the whole movie. I just watch that opening scene and then I turn it off and that's it. Because that car, I just think that's one of the prettiest cars of all time.
Captures my imagination.
But Lamborghini is definitely the one for me. But I've never actually really driven one. Next week we are.
So this is your real hero drive.
Genuinely.
Yeah. Well, the big one is a Murcielago, which
that's
we will get to with the guys from Rat Dog. But this will be interesting.
This will be good.
To be fair, it kind of moves us on to a section, want of the week.
Want of the week.
Now, Tom, your want of the week, but this is the car we've been thinking about, we'd like to own. You might not buy it, just thinking about. You just had a 430. Is there anything else on your list for this that you've been thinking about that you woke up one morning and thought, you know what, I need to buy one of those?
No, but
Tom's like, nah, I got them all.
Collected them all.
Well, yeah, you know, it's I've been lucky to tick an awful lot of boxes. Yeah, but there's so if budgets, you know, because the stuff I looked for is I think to myself, oh, you know, can I actually achieve that?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but
realistic.
Yeah, yeah. Realistically, can I achieve that? You know, and can I sell this, do that? Normally, it normally means, you know, sort of like getting rid of a few bits and pieces to make it happen. But have I really got anything that I really desperately want at the moment? And the answer to that is
nothing that you've just been thinking about through the week that you've gone, oh, I'd like, that's kind of nice.
So are you like me? Do you, I mean, I'm assuming you're like me. You are literally looking on the internet.
Oh, literally every morning and night.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
for me this week, it's the 550 because I've been researching it for not only that. Well, to be fair, it's the 550 is always there, but this week I've been researching things you can do to a 550, and Gen V make a set of throttle bodies. For a 550.
For a 550?
Yeah.
Really?
But you'd have to run standalone everything and your dials wouldn't work and everything wouldn't work. So it's not really feasible. But I was just looking into it going,
but why wouldn't your dials work?
Because you'd need to run a standalone ECU. So you'd have to chop up the wiring harness and stuff.
That means it doesn't, that, so that just means it's a challenge to make it happen.
Yeah.
Tom is offering
to make it happen. So nicely, Tom. You know, it's great. So, I
love Gen V throttle bodies. I've got Gen V throttle bodies on quite a few of my bits and pieces.
Believe me, when I say that I was researching it, I mean, I was looking at pinouts and trying to work out how I would actually wire it in to make it work. Yeah. But it's, I just want that. But there was something. Oh, the other thing was a BMW M6, because one came up on Copart that I've done the same thing. I've said to myself, no more cars till I fix some and I sell some.
Yeah, well, that's.
But then a BMW M6 came up on BCA. With 210,000 miles. That's the notoriously unreliable BMW V10 that's done 210K.
Yeah.
And I was like, surely we chuck a bit of it.
There was also, I remember seeing on the auction, there was an odd auction like discrepancy. Odd mileage discrepancy where it dipped.
It was just a year where it was clearly going up and then the MOT test put it in wrong because it just went straight back up.
So it's not likely to be higher than that.
No.
There is one car that I keep on looking at this week, so I'm actually thinking about going like my next winter daily.
Here we go.
Okay, so I know it's not quite winter yet, but I'm thinking, if I get rid of this car, that car, the Disco Ford, I've not, and this is a bit of a cliche really, but only because I've not really owned one, is I've been looking at a V8 5-litre Defender.
Okay, of the new ones?
The newer ones, yeah. Okay. There's one on collecting cars, only done 14,000 miles, and it's on, when I looked yesterday, no, this morning actually, it was on 61K.
Okay.
But it was also VAT qualifying, which is great because it means I could buy it as a company hack and claim the VAT backs, which made it even more appealing, you know. And Meg's like, why are you looking at that Defender so much? And I'm like, because it's VAT qualifying. Oh, God. I have actually been looking quite a lot at.
A V8 Defender. That's quite cool.
Honestly.
You said you quite like those.
I do quite like Defenders, yeah. Obviously, it's a Land Rover product, so they're just going to depreciate like a fall out of the sky, like a lead balloon. But every time I see a Defender, I don't like the long ones.
No.
110, I think.
Middle
is
and short.
Yeah, you got the 130, the 110, or the 90.
110 and a 90 are the ideal
for
what I... 110, perfect.
Yeah, I want to live with one for 6 months because I see them in the workshop and we fix them and stuff, but I've never actually lived with one.
And then buy yourself an Octa. Get yourself in the line for the Octa. What's yours, Will?
I'm yearning and trying to work out how on earth I could buy... Well, I've said Gallardo before many, many weeks.
Of course.
We're still talking about one of the week, aren't we?
Yes.
Yeah. But now it's the Gallardo Superleggera.
Oh,
which it's
how much is one of them?
I don't know. They're in the region of sort of 80 up to whatever plus, basically.
Okay.
But the problem is, so there's two different, there's an early Gallardo, which has a 5-litre proper Lamborghini engine, and then they facelifted it, and it's got an Audi, not Audi engine, but an Audi sort of derived.
I never see the problem with these things with, you know, like you can, if you really wanted to, you could probably go out and get a bank loan and get the money together to buy that.
Well, that's, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm now looking at what everything's worth. My girlfriend is worth.
It's the
this
running.
This Mustang's looking quite valuable right now.
Yeah. Cheers, Neil.
It's the running cost of that, isn't it?
That is, again, we're going to talk about this in the video we're going to film. A Superleggera in particular is obscene. So most of them, if not all of them, are carbon ceramics. Carbon ceramics are meant to last the life. You know about carbon ceramics. Carbon ceramic brakes.
I can tell you that the brake pads are very, very expensive.
The pads are very expensive, but in theory, the discs are meant to last the life of the car, really, depending on its use. But if they don't, you get something in there, they crack, you get a some kind of mark.
So the rear...
All the brakes on that are £20,000.
Yeah.
Which I almost fell out of my chair.
What was the door card?
A door cards are about $8,000.
$8,000 door card.
A mirror, because it's all like carbon door cards and the mirrors are carbon. What was it? Oh, clutch change.
They're about $10,000 or $12,000, aren't they?
It's about $20,000.
Yeah.
And they go through them quite quickly. One of the like selling points of Lamborghinis of this era is clutch percentage.
So it'd be fine.
I don't think so.
You can whack it up on the ramp, give it a go. Come on.
Meticulously maintained by me.
If the clutch cost £300,
yeah,
I would be up for it. But a clutch is about $5,000.
Oh,
so I'd be doing this, putting it in the car. Just
you see, well, the thing is, you'd never drive it then, would you? That's the problem, isn't it?
I would seriously... I'm trying to figure it out. I'm doing the numbers.
Doing the maths in your head.
I'm doing man maths. And it's all coming back as green ticks, even though it shouldn't be.
Is it like a car vertical check?
But yeah. But in my head, a Gallardo Superleggera is, because that, again,
you're not going to lose any money.
It's not a cheap car by any means. And it costs a lot of money and there's a lot of risk involved. But its rival at the time, which is a 430 Scuderia, the lightweight version, they have absolutely skyrocketed.
If you buy it and the clutch blows up and you can't afford to replace it, I'll do a good deal for you. I'll buy it off you. Obviously.
There you go. You'll fix it for me.
No, I'll buy it off you.
You buy it off me. Half price.
He'll buy it off you, and then when it's fixed, you can buy it back for less.
For the same price I paid.
I'll pay the loan off for you. There you go. As long as you made a decent down payment.
I'm going to get a Tom Lenthal loan.
No, we don't.
But that's mine. I've been watching videos of them, researching, and it's just one of the best noises. Because again, I said, they only made that engine for a sort of fine number of years. But that also makes it more unreliable because it's purely Lamborghini.
Perfect. I think we haven't got time for a forum or an argument. Sorry, or a conspiracy.
Or any of those things.
Because this is running on quite long. Tom, you talk too much, man.
Yeah, sorry.
It's your fault. You'll have to come again and we'll have to do an episode two with Tom.
We'll do another one when we've all got our Ferraris and Lamborghinis. Thank you very much for listening to the Cars Rule Everything Around Me podcast.
Theirs will be broken, of course.
Make sure that you go and follow Tom Lenthal on social media and follow what the guys do there. And we'll catch you next week. In Monterey.
Oh, yes, it will be in Monterey.
See you. Cars rule everything around me.
Bye.
Right.